Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World, episode 139. I'm Yoshan Jordan, and joining me today we have Q Lee, who is the president of Come to Us USA. How's it going, Q?
Good. How are you?
Very good. I noticed you come prepared with your branded hat, so that's always a
yes. Always a plus. I made some golf hats.
That's good. Well, no, we're collecting hats at the moment, so maybe after the podcast, I'll see if I can
weasel one. I'd love to send one over. Yes.
Good. There we go. We're collecting hats, but that's not the point of the podcast. We're not here to collect hats. We're here to talk about what's going on in terms of blockchain games. Before we get onto that, though, we'll talk a little bit about Q. Maybe so. We've known each other for a long time now. Getting on for a decade, I think, back when we were in mobile games, and we both end up in blockchain, so it's sort of interesting. But can you give us a bit of a potty history about what you've been up to in the game space?
For me, straight out of college, Gameville, which is now Come to Us, was the first company that I joined. We were just a group of young entrepreneurs trying to do new things in the gaming space. Mobile was I think we were one of the first mobile game companies in the world. Come to Us, which we acquired, started mobile business in 1998. I started in 2000, so one of the founders of the company Gameville. So we've been in the mobile gaming, the gaming industry for the past 23 years. We're still fairly new to the blockchain industry, but you know, one of the things that I do want to mention is the blockchain industry right now. It really reminds me of the early days of mobile, you know, where everything was chaotic. The user experience wasn't great. Lots of potential. Yes, but a lot of things that we actually had to build out until. So we had to wait like 8 years until the App Store came around. And so it takes a long term preparation and building, but I think with the amount of capital that's coming in to the blockchain space, I expect it to move at a much more faster pace.
Mm-hmm. I remember vividly back in the day when we first met up. I've told this story many times, but where you guys before the App Store allowed in-app purchases, and you guys were basically running free-to-play mobile games with in-app purchases, and you were having to remove all the in-app purchase stuff to release them on the Apple Store. So it just seems so weird that and I guess that was how advanced the Korean mobile space was. Anyway, we're not talking about mobile games today per se. We're talking about blockchain, and I guess you touched on it a little bit there, that the how Come to Us sort of has got into blockchain over the last kind of 18 months or so, and I guess it's more interesting, I think, from outsiders looking into the Korean market, because it's not just Come to Us as, you know, one of the bigger sort of mobile games companies in South Korea, but pretty much the entire Korean industry, I think probably there are some exceptions, but very few exceptions, basically really kind of I don't quite know from the inside whether you sort of all really understood blockchain, or all thought this blockchain's the way ahead, but it was quite interesting how all these companies and really still we're seeing sort of Japan, I think, catching up a little bit, but the West and sort of Europe really not interested at all in blockchain. So was there any sort of obvious reason why Korean game companies really just thought blockchain is going to be something that's going to be big, and we need to be sort of setting the scene now? Because I think at that time other people were obviously interested, but they just didn't make the decision. Then they decided we're not doing it at the moment. And the Korean companies sort of made the decision and just got on with it, started doing it, which is sort of quite interesting.
Yeah. So I think like Koreans in general, we're very early adopters, even as consumers. And I think the huge amount of consumer interest also led into the developers getting early into the space too. If you look at the amount of crypto transactions that are happening outside of within South Korea, I'd say it's probably one of the top countries in the world. And I think Korea has a lot of good development talent, not only on the client side, but also on the back end side. So if you look at all of the developers. You know, like it would be weird if a backend engineer didn't say blockchain is interesting. So this is all that we were dreaming about, and it definitely sparked a lot of interest. I think most of the companies were waiting for the right moment to come in. You don't want to go get into the industry too early, and you don't want to get into it too late. But in general, I think a little bit early is how we prefer to do things. At Kontos, I can't speak on behalf of all of the other companies, but that's one of the reasons for mobile we got in maybe too early, but because we were early, we were able to carve out a position within the mobile gaming industry. Because we were early in the free-to-play space and we were dabbling around with it, I think compared to the Western competitors out there, we were able to position ourselves and have a good title like Summoner's War early in the market. And so it's basically the same approach. We've seen a lot of market cycles happen, and definitely we defined blockchain as one of the bigger market cycles that's going to happen in the future. If you probably this for the same reason why you're covering blockchain, you've seen many market cycles too. So, and when Axie Infinity and NBA Top Shot was being adopted in mass market, we thought, oh, it's already starting in mass market. You know, we'd better not be behind the game. And yeah, so I think when you talk about all of the Korean companies, I think because they've seen what happened in the free-to-play space firsthand, I think that also sparked a lot of interest to getting early into the blockchain space.
Yeah, no, I think it is interesting that that there clearly are, you can be quite, don't want to be overly descriptive, but clearly there sort of are sort of different regions of the world that sort of view games through slightly different lenses, and sort of, you know, just developers sort of want to work on certain different things. I think you know, clearly Korea is was very, you know, Korea was sort of the starting point of free to play, really, wasn't it? You know, 20 years ago. So that's sort of I think the Korean industry has always looked at games through a different lens to say, you know, maybe sort of, you know, North American game developers who probably always looked at it, even though they're not making big sort of premium games anymore, that there's still sort of the lens that they tend to look at stuff through is that sort of, we're doing a big PC console game, and I think it's some sort of difference. So that makes sense. And I guess the other interesting thing is because the big Korean companies, I think when a few of them made a few of them said we're doing blockchain, then sort of almost it became you'd be the odd one out if you didn't say it. So it's almost like consensus in the other way. Whereas in the West, if you said we're doing, like Ubisoft said, we're doing blockchain, everyone pointed at them and said, "Oh, look at you, silly people doing blockchain," and no one else. So
I do have to agree to that, you know, because Korea has so many unicorn gaming companies, and they're all publicly listed companies too. And when two public companies, like when one public company goes, talks about blockchain, they might think, oh, that's an outlier. But when two or three start talking about it, then you get questioned. What are you doing in the blockchain space when your competitors are already deep in there? What are you doing? So I definitely feel like pretty much all of the executives within the Korean gaming industry were forced to think about blockchain a lot too. So.
And I guess, you know, one of the other interesting things, and I guess it was this was because maybe sort of Korean companies just said we're going to start experimenting with that, with this now. How are we going to do about it? How are we going to? What's the easiest way of doing that? Or what's the sort of the? How can we sort of get this stuff to market as quick as possible? It's not just come to us, but a lot of Korean companies basically just said, you know, there's tons of games being developed, sort of PC and free-to-play mobile stuff that those companies are doing, and they. And I think, you know, Kontos is a good example where basically just with a lot of those games, you just sort of said, well, we're going to put some blockchain in there and just sort of see how it works. So I think other people maybe took a step back and said, right, we're going to develop a game from scratch for blockchain, and it's going to come out in 3 years' time. And I think Korean companies just said, well, we'll just add some stuff in now, which is, I guess, what we'll go on to talk about. Because, you know, how many games have you launched now? You've launched a few. up to this point, I think.
Yeah. So we've launched already 8 games on our mainnet. But as you mentioned, so creating a good game, you know, we could have moved into the blockchain space really quickly with our original game. But would the game be fun? It wouldn't be fun if you only developed the game for a year. So if we needed mass market education, definitely the first focus should be if the game is fun. So naturally, it would have to be the same experience as developing any Web2 game. So our approach was let's take all of our Web2 games that were in production, slightly pivoted or add game mechanics into it and turn it into a Web3 game. And one of the reasons why we decided to go all in into Web3 is it's really hard to send the when you're running a lot of different teams within your company, it's really hard to say you guys focus on Web3 and you guys focus on Web2, because then they'll be like, can I be on the Web2 side? Can I be on the Web2? Innovator's dilemma, you know, the reason, if you don't self-disrupt yourself, you know, you really can't change your company. So, we chose to put a strong message into our team that, whatever game that you're developing on, you have to implement Web3. And this is going to be a long-term approach to educate our users. It's not going to happen overnight, but just put a small portion. Let's just create a small portion within your game that's Web3 so that the users can learn about it, get used to it. And over time, maybe we'll grow that portion out. Over time, when we launch newer titles, we'll start at a much more aggressive point, but we had to send out a message internally to all of our development teams that Web3 is the future, and you have to implement it. Of course, there's also resistance within our teams. Of course, there are also resistance with our users. But this is a beginning. You know, like imagine you were an online PC gaming company back in the days, and you said, you have to do mobile. You know, it's the same thing. You know, they would have said, oh, why do I have to do mobile? You know, the developers would resist. The users would also complain. Why am I playing on this device? But that's how innovation happens. And I think we wanted to make a strong message to our internal development team that we're going all in into Web3, and our users may go through some inconvenience in the beginning, but our eventual goal is to bring something amazing to you that will completely change the landscape.
But what is quite interesting for the games that have at least come out so far is actually you have to work quite hard to sort of get the Web3 thing, isn't it? I mean, you do actually have to sort of play. Yeah. You don't just sort of rock in and go, all right, I'm going to buy some NFTs and I'm going to have this super powered character. Yeah. And you know, you actually have to play the game often to quite a high level.
So well we tried that too, you know, so but we also everybody in industry noticed that, you know, so if you let the users go into Web3 immediately, then there's going to be gamers, but there's also going to be traders who will try to extract from your system, which aren't gamers. When we have to make sure that these users are contributing to the ecosystem so that they can also extract from the ecosystem. We can't print money out of air.
Nobody can print
money out of air. It has to be a sustainable economy that you're building. And in order to be a sustainable economy, there has to be contributors. That there can be also benefiters. It was simple as that. Like last year was, we saw what play to earn can do. We saw the potential of it, but we also learned the downside from it. But we can't be printing money from air. You can print money from air when the token price keeps on increasing. But if it doesn't, then you can't, or if there are enough buyers into the ecosystem, you could do that. But if it's not, then you have to have it very controlled. So why don't we, so the way that we approached it is, why don't we have a very controlled environment where we make sure that it's a zero-sum game, where the players that are contributing that are the players that can extract. Then it becomes, it kind of becomes like, you know, all of those skills type of games where real money gaming in some ways, when you're only talking about tokens. But if we do it in a Web3 way, then there's a lot of much more flexibility around what type of currencies that you could do. And of course, we're also bound to a lot of the legal issues around the world, but we thought this would be at least a sustainable way to approach it. So that's one way, by putting a significant play gate and making sure some users are, making sure the users are contributors before that they can benefit from it. I think that's where you're referring to, like games like Ace Fishing or Summoners War Chronicles. But for games like Minigame Party, what we're doing differently is we're generating revenue from ad revenue. So everybody becomes a contributor from the beginning, but we only share what we a portion of what we earn from ads back to the users. So if you do it that way, then you could distribute it to everybody, the amount will change every day depending on what the collective contribution is to the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the really important thing, isn't it? As you pointed out, you can't even over the medium term, you can't create value from thin air. So that, you know, blockchain works really well when there is a sort of sustainable and hopefully growing economy that people are playing and spending money because they like the game, and then some of that or portion of that can be then sort of redistributed in certain ways. You know, that's sort of the game design sort of aspect, but if there's no one putting money in the first place or creating sort of value, then the tokens clearly they can't have any value. So I think that's the clear sort of learning from the last sort of year or so, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. And just like, you know, when we were first doing free to play, like a lot of people, we did a lot of different type of experiments on free to play. I think free to play is even still evolving. You know, and every game designer has a different take on that. Every business model designer has a different take on it. But I think we're gonna go through a lot of that collective iterations. You know, we're gonna do a lot of experiments ourselves. We're going to look at our competition and see what they're doing well. Oh, that's smart. And, you know, we'll take that idea and then we'll also try to implement it into our gaming systems too. But I think there's going to be a lot of experiments happening and then a lot of iterations happening on top of that. So like not only from our company, but from the whole industry. And I think Axie Infinity, I'm not saying like they did a bad job not creating an unsustainable economy. I think they did a great job. And I think there was a great amount of learning from there. And what we're trying to do is improve on top of that and suggest a different way of approaching play to own economies. So I think we're going to learn, we're learning from every single launch that we're doing, and we'll continue to learn to find the right way to do this.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking actually very generally. We've not got into any specifics at all. So I guess we should spend some time doing specifics, sort of joking about your hat. XPLA is your blockchain, and and without rubbing too much salt in the wound, I guess can we go through the story of your first blockchain? Because I guess that's sort of, you know, South Korean companies launching all this stuff a year ago. There was a very famous South Korean blockchain called Terra, and I guess that was quite early on in your sort of blockchain in the cycle of Korean companies going, we're going to do a lot of blockchain games, and Terra being this at that point the sort of in the whole blockchain space the sort of biggest blockchain, you know, it was the one that everyone was looking at, and you were sort of working with them. So how when that sort of whole thing sort of fell apart, I mean obviously that was I imagine quite a shock to you guys, but was there any point at which you kind of thought, maybe this blockchain thing is much too complicated and we should leave it to someone else? Obviously you didn't, because you've come up with your own now XPLA blockchain, but talk us through that.
Yeah, so initially when we thought we should build a layer two blockchain gaming platform and focus on just building great games, building a gaming focused platform and building great games on top of that was our initial approach. And we, of course, a lot of our engineers being based in South Korea, you know, working with Korean development teams was very comfortable. And when we looked at the ecosystems out there, we thought that Terra was a good ecosystem to build on. We loved the Cosmos ecosystem. We loved the way that we could customize a lot of things and then work on the user experience. And after everything fell apart on Terra, I think there was a lot of learnings for us too. You know, we also learned that you know, our company is also a big company. We also have a lot of assets ourselves. You know, we've been running live operations for our games for more than a decade. We were a little scared at the beginning because this was a completely new world for us. And but as we got more accustomed to it, as we learned more to it, I think that we grew our confidence in building our own layer one. And because we had so much assets that we could bring into the Web3 space, we were thinking, why don't we build one and not do it ourselves, but like build a decentralized gaming and content focused platform and really invite all of the best creators around the world. You know, we've been in the gaming industry for such a long time. We have a large amount of partners that we could potentially bring in. And we thought it would be very different because when we looked at all of the blockchains out there, and when we had a discussion of that with them, we didn't really feel like they understood what gaming was, and it felt like more they were like more general infrastructures, and nobody was a game creator themselves. So we were thinking, if we, as a creator ourselves, if we build something that's very focused. That's very focused. Right now, it may be really hard to tell the difference, but like if we do this like for 3 to 5 years, like let's look at how our chain is gonna look like compared to all of the competition, because we're so focused on gaming and so focused on these content. You know, as a content creator, we would probably build the best tools available. And as we invite really one the stronger developers that we could work with together and publishers out there together, we were thinking, oh, you know, we could make really something special. So I don't think Valve thought of like building Steam back in the days, you know, when there was like the Microsofts of the world to distribute content to. And but so we thought, you know, it's one of these unique opportunities where we get to start these things and we could control our own destiny. We love the Cosmos ecosystem, and we thought we could be a great part of it. So let's do it by ourselves this time. So, you know, I'm really proud of our team, like because we probably went through the hardest time, right after we started. We probably went through the hardest time going with Terra. FTX was our lead investor too. We went through FTX. And we're still here. You know, we and it, but our approach has always been a very long-term approach, and I think getting these type of experience very early on made us more seasoned. And now I think I'm proud to say I'm a veteran in the Web3 space.
Absolutely. Yes, and it's with the bruises. I mean, it's kind of interesting that the going back to the sort of, you know, so many South Korean companies were in this, that and there's, I think I get the impression there's quite a sort of strong, obviously you're competitors to some degree, but there's quite a strong sort of South Korean community, and sort of everyone's, as far as I see, all the South Korean companies are sort of building their own sort of infrastructure. So it's kind of interesting compared to maybe what's happening in Japan, where they seem to be, maybe not all of them, but there's quite a lot of building around Oasis, this blockchain. It's kind of interesting that all the Korean companies sort of basically took the decision, we'll do our own rather than sort of coming up with a South Korean gaming blockchain. But
it's different. I think I would think it's, some of it is cultural.
Yeah.
I think some of it is also because of like the type of environments that are that they're placed in. You know, when you look at Japan, I think the top exchanges, they weren't handling hundreds of tokens. You know, I think top exchange was handling only like 15 tokens. Then like if everybody created their own mainnet, and would they be listing all of the tokens? It would have been really hard, you know, to do that. So I don't know the exact answer. And I think there's also a lot of ego among the Korean, ego and pride among the Korean publishers, you know, like doing something together with them means I'm going under.
You know? Oh, I see. Okay. But, like that, is it?
So, but I think, you know, we really want to try to do something great together with a lot of Korean partners, hopefully. And I wouldn't say everybody's doing their own. Yeah, it's not, okay. I think. We're open to discussions.
I see. Okay. Maybe something going on behind the scenes. You can't tell me there. Good. We'll wait to see. Cool. And I guess the sort of specific game, the game I wanted to talk about the most. You mentioned a few. So you've had I guess Ace Fishing has come out fairly recently, and you had this mini game party. Those are both mobile games. I mean, the Ace Fishing is a long term franchise you've been doing of sort of fishing. Summoner's War Chronicles is sort of, you know, whether it's Web3 or not, it is Web3. But that's sort of one of your bigger games being released this year, you know, in total, isn't it? So given that sort of, you know, it doesn't really matter whether it's Web3 or not, or not Web3. Yeah, that's a very high profile game. For you, was there any temptation to go, this one's so big, you know, Summoner's War is this massive multi-billion dollar franchise, was there a temptation to say, this one's so big, let's not put Web3 in that one, because that's, we don't want to mess around with that, or as part of being all in, were you always like, yeah, Summoner's War's Chronicles, yeah, it's going to have Web3 in there?
I would be lying if there wasn't resistance internally. And that's why we had to, like, the executive team also had to have a strong stance on that to make sure that everybody's aligned. I think we're, like, even with these three games, they're all different in many ways. So, like, when you say big game, what's the definition of a big game? You know, like, some people might think huge MMORPG games, you know, console, like, three D. Like 100-man development teams, you know, these could be big games. So that's probably the Summoner's War Chronicles approach.
I mean, that's a big 3D MMORPG PC mobile game.
but Mini Game Party is also a big game. You know, people, you know, King's game, Candy Crush, you know, do you think that's a big game? It's a big game. It's a huge game, right? It's probably it's bigger than most of the console games out there. So like, Mini Game Party is kind of like that. You know, it's a casual game that anybody can play. young or old, male or female, you know, anybody can pick up and play. It's a collection of like 13 different hyper casual games within one, with a huge RPG backend element to it, and with Web3 on top of it. So on the surface, it looks very friendly to you, but it's a big game too. So I would, and then fishing too. Like, these are like games in very certain segments, you know. So like sport, we love sports games because they're evergreen titles. You know, they don't like RPG games. Or even these casual type of games, a lot of them come and go. They're very trendy, and sometimes it's not evergreen, but we've had huge success with Ace Fishing over the years because it's been like there's a core audience who love fishing, you know. And probably we were one of the best fishing games out there for such a long time, you know. And we wanted to bring those users also into Web3. We have the best people. A lot of people don't remember that we also have the best selling baseball game on the App Store too. We have an 8-year relationship with Major League Baseball. That game has been growing every year, and you know, so we love those type of evergreen franchises. And so if you look at it on an annual basis, it's not a big game. But if you combine all of the revenues over the years, you know, it's a big game. It's really a big game. So we're bringing three different types of big games into it. So I wouldn't say like one is more important than the other. But I do kind of wish we kind of spread out the launches because so that we can focus a little bit more. But I think we're definitely making sure that we're covering all the different type of audiences out there.
And I guess, you know, obviously you're sort of slightly over egging the point, which we won't go to. But I guess there is this interesting thing that it could be that you know, what I might, you know, like a you know, Ace Fishing, you know, I might call that sort of a niche game. So it's probably, you're not going to convert many people to playing that game who don't have some sort of interest in fishing. I mean, it's just not, it's, you know, but who's to say that those, that actually may not be a very successful sort of small community who really get into the Web3 aspects of that game for, you know, I don't know how it's been implemented in the game, but you can imagine, you know, for some, so what you're saying about how you're using Web3 is for people who are really interested and engaged and probably spending money in a game, they're the ones who are going to get access to the Web3 stuff. And actually, that sort of, it may not be tens of millions of players, but the players who are playing that game, that actually Web3 may work really well for them in a way that, you know, we don't know yet. I mean, Summoners Wars clearly is I say big game because it's sort of like a gaming game. You
know. Yeah. You know, I think so. And I think like since I have a golf hat on, like when you're playing golf, you know, of course you could go to the PGA and try to win millions of dollars by being a professional gamer. But I think also at the golf course, you know, what happens is a lot of people just put like small bets, and that also enhances the fun in a lot of ways. I think I don't think a lot of players are just playing play to own games to make money, but I think it's also because it enhances the excitement of the experiment, you know, like, and when did you ever get something back from a gaming company that you poured your heart and soul and all of your money in your wallet into, you know, but getting something back, a token of appreciation, might be fun, you know, and maybe that could, so we want to learn how the users respond to the different type of mechanics that we're introducing. And we want to play around with it and collect the feedback and then keep on improving. I think it's a very iterative process that we're just starting to. And so I think it's going to be a very interesting journey.
Cool. I'm just going to go, because I have been waffling on about how we haven't got enough detail. So I've just got the press release here about the Summoner's Wars Chronicles. I do think it's interesting for people who haven't played it. I have actually started playing it, but as ever, I'm not anywhere close to the blockchain stuff. But the thing, so Summoner's War Chronicle went live as a Web 2 game launched a couple of months ago, and the Web 3 part has literally just gone live, I think, last week, and that's called the Mileage Shop. So the Mileage Shop is you get these this sort of currency, these in-game items, and you can, I'm looking here, you can convert the free Rahil at a rate of 102 for three mileage. So mileage is another currency. You can do that 10 times a day. So that's up to 30 mileages a day. And then the mileage can be used for Web 2 stuff like Legendary Scrolls, Blessing Marbles, or it can be used to convert into another currency that then can be used to be converted into XPLA. So that sort of sounds, you know, that is quite complicated, I think, for people who haven't played the game. I think once you play the game, sort of, that's just the system. That's how it works. But I think it goes back to your idea of having this stuff has to be plagated, or you know. Yes. And I guess at the moment you have to have quite strong gating around that, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And over time, obviously, that can be, you know, that can be flexible.
Exactly.
Around.
Yeah. Exactly. I think you hit it correctly. I think like Web3 is such a powerful tool, like and they probably add in a game designer's perspective, they added like 10 more levers that you can play with. And if we let the players play with all the 10 more levers, then we don't know where the economy is going to go. So what we're doing is we're constraining a lot of the different type of variables so that they can only. Well, and we're starting to play around with one or two. Once we feel more comfortable with it, then we'll open it up more and more. And I think also it may be really hard for a new user to come in and understand this, but free to play was also very hard in the beginning for new users to come in and understand. I think it has to start with the core user base who is willing to figure out anything that will help that their 0.1 addition to their stats within the game. So I think that's where we're starting with. And over time, we believe it's going to be much more generally adopted. It's going to be much more accessible to the users. Us as the game publisher, we're going to get more comfortable with it because we understand what the user user behaviors are, the players' behaviors are. Mm-hmm. So I think like for people who are curious, I'd love you to try figuring that out, that part out, and we'll probably have enough material for you to understand it. But but it's going to be a slow adoption phase. But I think. But we're bringing it into one of the biggest games that we have. So I think there's a huge upside to what this can bring over time. Hmm. But at the beginning, we're just we're softly launching it.
It's fascinating. It's quite a. So I've only just sort of started playing it, and it is obviously it's just a very high quality RPG anyway. So without the Web3 stuff, but it is interesting when you hopefully when I get to that stage of picking apart how those sort of kind of levers are there, because it's as you say, even just a Web2 free to play game, the economies are incredibly complicated. They have multiple currencies. They have multiple sort of limited things going on all the time. They have, you know, certainly the retailing is incredibly complicated and well thought out. So it's almost like the Web3 stuff is almost just like another upper level, you know, of stuff that people are doing anyway. The fact it's on a blockchain is to some degree neither here nor there. I mean, obviously, in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, the users, you know, the users are. These days, the users are game designers. You know, if you can be smarter than the users, then you're already successful. So, I'm sure like after a week or so, there's going to be so many articles within the communities, within the forums, like saying this is the best way to earn and attack this. Numerous guides already starting to come out. So
cool.
So yeah, it's going to be a fun journey. We're really excited about these launches.
Good. Well, we covered a lot of stuff there. Thank you so much, Q. That was really good.
Okay, thank you.
Good, and we await the first data that you can give. Hopefully, in the next kind of month or so, we'll get some data about what's going on there. But we'll keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, thanks to everyone for watching, listening to the podcast, however you're consuming it. So every episode, we're talking to people who are, you know, as Q said, experimenting with this great new set of levers we have in the game space, a way of incentivizing people, sort of sharing success of games with people, allowing people to, you know, create value as well. Hopefully, I think it's making more interesting games, and I think it's going to make more successful games for developers and people playing them as well. So please subscribe to the podcast, and see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.